Thanks for joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Shackman. Even the most zealous guardians of the environment don't realize that they often do their worst environmental damage when they die. The American way of death, often presided over by seemingly small but often corporatized funeral homes, may in fact be one of the most polluting and environmentally damaging things that we do. The chemicals used, the practices that have become commonplace, that are sold to grieving families each and every day, are polluting, they're non-sustainable, and now families are beginning to push back. The result is a green burial movement that is just taking hold and that can actually change the way we think about how we die. We're going to talk about this today with my guest, Suzanne Kelly. She's an independent scholar. Her work spans the topics of the environment, feminism, sex, and death. For over a decade, she's been writing about the idea of green burial. She's the author of the book Greening Death, and it is my pleasure to welcome Suzanne Kelly here today. Suzanne, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How old is the green burial movement?
Well, the first green burial ground, if we mark it there, was started in 1998 in Westminster, South Carolina. So it's a little, I would say, in the U.S., it's a little over a decade and a half old.
And in the early period of time, if we go back a decade and a half, what was the origins of the movement? Really, what got it started?
Well, I think if we look at the green burial movement, this is not a movement to reform death care that's coming from within inside the funeral industry. The funeral industry really, if we mark it as starting, say, in the mid to the late 1800s, and what we know as funerary care right now as a kind of formalized profession, the move to green up our death care is really coming really from a grassroots movement, coming from individual people who want to open up green burial grounds, individual communities. So it's happening all around the country, but it's sort of like, as I describe it in the book, a kind of waking up to these polluting ways that we've been doing death, but really at a local level.
To what extent are people in the death business, the funeral industry, to what extent are they taking a serious look at this?
I think it depends who you talk to. In my experiences and in my conversations with people in the funeral industry, there are some folks who are taking it quite seriously, and then there are others who just see it as a fad that might fade away. So I think it really just depends who you're talking to.
One of the things that we've seen over the past several years is a lot of small independent funeral homes have gone away and or been corporatized, taken over by large corporations that are in this business. What impact has that had on this movement?
Well, I mean, I think that this is one of the critiques from the green burial movement and also the alternative death movement more generally that we see kind of coursing through the culture right now that includes the home funeral movement and also the Funeral Consumers Alliance that has been working for decades now to kind of like crack down on the funeral industry. But it's true, the funeral industry has become not only more industrialized, but more corporate. And so whatever personalization maybe families at least once felt that brought some comfort, I think, has been slowly disappearing. As I talk about in the book, the funeral industry is about a $15 billion industry that's made up of funeral directors and funeral homes, many of these part of large conglomerates like SCI, but it's also made up of products, you know, cemeteries, caskets, chemicals, vaults, and insurance companies that manage prepaid funerals, I think all of which the green burial movement is kind of reacting against.
When we look at the movement and we look at the environmental aspect of it, how big a deal is that in terms of the environmental impact that traditional burial is having?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that when we're talking about the toll of funerary pollution, we don't mean to say, and I say we in terms of those folks who are green burial advocates, that this is perhaps the dire stuff of fracking, right? I mean, you know, but it is part of a larger picture of the way that we treat the earth and the way that we see ourselves as separate from the earth. But let me just detail a little bit some of the pollution and some of the unsustainable ways of the funeral industry. And three things that are most commonly focused on from the perspective of the green burial movement is the use of chemical embalming fluid, the use of sealed hardwood and metal caskets. Most often those are treated hardwoods, and the use of burial vaults. Burial vaults are typically made out of reinforced concrete. They're often sometimes made out of plastic. They're also sometimes made out of asphalt, which is a semi-solid form of petroleum. And so all of these things ultimately leach into the soil, we know that embalming fluid is biodegradable, which is not so bad, but it also poses a threat to worker health because it is a known formaldehyde. Its main ingredient is a known carcinogen. And then even in some studies in cemeteries of the silt loam, it's been noted that there have been elevated levels of zinc and cobalt and lead from the modern casket and also from the burial vault. So there definitely is a polluting toll. And I think, you know, one of the things I try to point out in the book is that we have over time kind of had this overwhelming irrational fear of the decay of the dead body as being a terrible contaminant. But really what we've been doing is creating all of these other accoutrements, right, of the funeral industry that are the real pollutants. And so, in fact, it's a real reversal. It's a real reversal of the truth.
Beyond the environmental aspect, what are the true public health consequences and public health aspects of this?
Well, I think that this is one of the things that the Green Burial Movement is trying to demystify. There is this kind of prevailing social belief, as I was saying, that the dead body is a dangerous contaminant that can sort of wreak havoc on the living. But it's really kind of a myth. Of course, there are some diseases that bodies can have, something like Ebola, for instance, wherein the dead body becomes more dangerous after death rather than less. But by and large, most dead bodies do not pose a harm to the living. They don't pose a harm to the land. And dead bodies can be put straight into the earth even with nothing and pose no risk. Even the World Health Organization has been working since the 1980s to get folks to see that in times of natural disaster, it's really important to tend to the living first and not to rush to bury the dead. So the public health hazard really isn't there, and I think that the Green Burial Movement, as well as the Home Funeral Movement, has been working really hard to try to get folks to see the falsehood of this.
Talk about the Home Funeral Movement and exactly what that is, and how what the nexus is with what we're talking about from an environmental perspective.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I was saying before, the Green Burial Movement is kind of walking hand in hand with a kind of an alternative death movement that's happening around the U.S. right now. I think that, you know, was in part sort of started in some ways with a move toward hospice and palliative care and elder law matters around advanced care planning. And that's extended into people thinking about, I mean, we used to have funerals in our homes, right, years and years ago, and that really stopped, pretty much halted in the middle of the 20th century. But there are still folks around who can remember having wakes and viewings in their own homes. And there is increasingly a move back to that, to a funeral in the home, but also, in particular, to people taking care of their own dead. As I mentioned in the beginning, the funeral industry is an industry. It's a professionalized industry that really only started around the late 1800s. But before that, death care in the U.S. was really an informal economy where families cared for their own dead, mostly actually the women of the family. And so there is an increasing move back toward that kind of informalized care around the country. And as we look at that, as we look at the move toward home funerals and home funeral guides, we can see that really in keeping with the Green Burial Movement.
What has happened in terms of public policy to keep up with this, to allow some aspects of this movement to go forward?
Well, you know, there are very few regulations, state laws or federal laws, that really get in the way of having a green cemetery, if we're just talking specifically about cemeteries. There is, again, these other myths, I think, that prevail. This idea, a lot of folks believe that embalming, for instance, is necessary, or that the burial vault, for instance, is necessary. But there are really no state or federal laws that that insist upon using any of these things. There are, unfortunately, many, if not most cemeteries around the U.S. Do increasingly, especially since the middle of the 20th century, started to require the use of burial vaults. Again, but there are really no laws around this. And for people who don't know, the use of the burial vault became sort of required increasingly by cemeteries because of the way that our cemeteries are so highly managed and manicured. If you put a body into the ground without a vault around it, the body's going to decay, and if you don't mound up the grave, then there'll be a kind of subsidence, a dip in the grass, essentially, or in the land. And since we have so much heavy machinery and lawnmowers, for instance, going across the grave sites, they want to accommodate for that, so they use these burial vaults.
What about the increase in cremation and what environmental impact that's having?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I think one of the things that we often hear is that the green burial movement is kind of a return to the past, the way that we, you know, buried our dead over 150 years ago, you know, this dust-to-dust practice. And that's largely true, except for that 150 years ago, we didn't have the modern crematorium. That really didn't come onto the scene until the late 1800s, really didn't start to spark the public imagination until the 1920s, and then really didn't begin to take off until the middle of the 20th century. Now we're at about 50% of all deaths, all dispositions end in cremation. And in some states, like Washington State, it's as high as 80, 85%. And it's expected by the year 2030 that if things move along in this fashion, that will be up to about 70% nationwide. And so the green burial movement absolutely does and ought to take account of the fact of cremation. And I guess it does so in this way. If you look at the green burial grounds that have emerged around the U.S., and there's probably more than 100 right now in some form or another. Most of them, if not, you know, I would say all, most of them, I would say, do accept interment and or scattering of cremated remains. Now, I think that the movement by and large recognizes that cremation is the second most environmentally sound way of disposing of the dead. And if it's less than ideal, that's because anytime you burn something, you know, you pose a threat to soil, water, and air. In parts of Europe, they've done a much better job at placing better filters on crematories to filter out byproducts like furans and dioxins and mercury from dental fillings, and finding better ways to more efficiently run our crematories. So that's really also, I would say, part of the green burial movement, especially because, you know, 150 years ago, 80% of the population was living in rural areas, and today 80% of the population in the U.S. lives in urban areas. So, you know, green burial in terms of return to a green cemetery may not be speaking to everyone.
Talk a little bit about that and what you're seeing as a result of increased urbanization in the country and how that fact alone is changing burial and funeral practices.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is certainly one of the ways. I wouldn't say that that's probably the singular reason that cremation rates have gone up. The main reason why cremation rates have really gone up in the U.S. really has to do with cost. You know, Jessica Mitford's book, The American Way of Death, that was published in 1963, you know, really, I think, tapped into people's simmering feelings of the and distrust of the funeral industry. And that's where we really started to see a kind of clamping down on the funeral industry. And there was the FTC rule where funeral providers had to itemize what they were selling folks. And so ultimately, I think people who started choosing cremation started doing it for cost, but also because the conventional ways of doing burial for many people really wasn't speaking to them. And so this may have to do with urbanization. I mean, I think some of the stuff that's coming out right now around greening up our death care is speaking to this. In particular, there's a woman in Seattle right now, Katrina Spade, who's trying to come up with a prototype for something she calls the Urban Death Project, recognizing that 80% of the population in the U.S. lives in urban areas, and maybe we may want to green up our death care, but folks may not necessarily feel comfortable about being buried in, you know, a parcel of land that's really far away from where they've lived their entire lives. And so she essentially is coming up with a prototype for what can only be described as a human composting site. So there's some interesting innovation that's happening on the green burial front when it comes to urban life.
Other things that are happening that are more environmentally sound variations of traditional burial, greener caskets and the like.
Yeah, there's a whole range, I think, on the market of biodegradable burial containers that people can buy if they're interested. I would say that when you look at the green burial movement and you talk to people or providers who are running green burial grounds or have open green burial grounds, by and large, what they see is what I call the shroud crowd. I think most, if not many folks who are interested in green burial opt for a shroud as a kind of burial container. But, you know, there are other burial containers that work just as well. I mean, people can use, you know, any kind of piece of cloth. They could even go in the ground with nothing if they wanted to. The plain pine box is also very common Wicker is also common. A cardboard box, which is typically used in direct cremations, is also very common. I think sometimes families will actually decorate these boxes in sort of very ornate ways. And so I think right now we're seeing sort of endless possibilities of biodegradable containers that are possible for families.
Where is the cutting edge of this going on? Is it going on in the U.S.? Are we seeing different practices going on in Europe or Asia at this point, things we can learn from?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, you know, the natural burial movement started in the UK long before it started in the US. And so it was probably going on for about a decade before any of these ideas kind of landed in the US or before we saw our first green burial ground. So I think, you know, what influence that's had on US practices is really hard to tell at this point. But, you know, we are all, when it comes to the kinds of conventional practices that I've spelled out here in terms of chemical embalming fluid and the use of the modern casket and the use of the burial vault, there are actually very few places around the world that rely on chemical embalming and also rely on burial vaults. So, you know, the change to these practices would not necessarily be happening everywhere. Australia actually is one place that does use similar conventional burial practices, and we do see a pushback beginning there as well. But I should say that these dust-to-dust practices, these green practices, are commonly practiced around the world, more commonly practiced around the world.
What are you seeing in terms of the way these changes in practices are making people feel differently or look at death differently in a broader context?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things when, you know, you talk to providers of green funeral care or green burial ground providers, green burial ground owners, they typically, I think, see more family involvement. So this is why I think I had originally been making those connections between the green burial movement and the home funeral movement, but people want to be more involved in the process. And so at the gravesite, for instance, I think you'll see what you might see at a Jewish funeral, right, where families will stick around and they'll fill the entire grave in. In some cases where it's allowed, some family members might even dig the grave. So I think at that level, in terms of meaning making, we see a lot more family involvement. But one of the things that I think that I try to point out in my book as an overarching theme of the green burial movement is that there's all kinds of reasons why people may choose green burial. I mean, I interviewed about 50 folks for the book, and people say all kinds of things. They'll say it's simpler, it's more sustainable, it's less polluting, it makes me feel like I can give something back to the earth, it's less expensive. But at the end of the day, what the movement is really giving us is the potential to connect back to a nature from which we've been separated for too long. And I think, you know, there have been environmental thinkers like Aldo Leopold and Rachel Carson and, you know, contemporarily like Vandana Shiva, who have urged us to recognize that we really need to begin to rethink our relationship to nature in order to really address the fact that the planet's on fire. And until we do that, the planet will continue to be on fire. And so green burial, I think, is one way for us to begin to do that.
How large is the movement, would you say, at this point? Is it still in its, no pun intended, embryonic stage?
You know, I think that it's beginning to really grow. Like I said, if the growth of green burial grounds is any indication, there have been a lot more that have opened in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, exponentially. So that's certainly an indication that consciousness is changing and that the word is spreading. But I still give talks regularly in my community, in my extended community of the Hudson Valley, and there's always folks that still have never even heard of green burial. If it's not being offered, of course, people aren't going to even know about it. So unless your funeral director is saying, oh, you know, green burial is an option, unless there's a green burial ground in your region, people aren't necessarily going to know anything about it. But I do believe that the movement is sort of at this pivotal point right now where it's just about to take off.
Regionally, where are we seeing the most activity in this area? On the East Coast, West Coast, South? Where is the real push?
You know, it's all around the U.S. There are quite a few. If you look, the Green Burial Council is a good place to look for a green burial ground if you're interested in finding one in your region. And the Green Burial Council is a not-for-profit, third-party certification organization that is sort of the gold standard for certifying green burial grounds in the U.S. So if you're looking for a green burial ground, that's a good place to look. And if you look there, you would see that some states have more green burial grounds than others. New York State, for instance, has quite a few, and that's where I live. So we have, I think, gosh, I'm trying to remember now, maybe 8 or 9. You would think in a state like California, for instance, that there would be a whole host of them, but in fact, there aren't. I think that there are only 3 places in California right now for such a large state where one can be interred in such a green manner. It doesn't necessarily match up with what we would think of an environmental consciousness, right, and regionally. But anyway, 2 good places to look. The Green Burial Council has a great list of certified providers, and the National Home Funeral Alliance also keeps a list of green burial providers, certified and uncertified.
Suzanne Kelly, she's the author of Greening Death. Suzanne, I thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you'll join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share it and help other people find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.